Okay, so we've got some interesting stuff to dig into today.
Yeah, definitely some fascinating material.
A California case, People v. Queller,
Right.
and it looks like we're diving deep into this kind of simple act, like just snatching a check. But it gets into some pretty complex legal questions around theft and punishment.
Exactly.
And I think as law students, you know, you're already thinking about this stuff.
Go for sure.
Like, what really defines theft, especially when something seems practically worthless,
Yeah.
and how does the law make sure someone doesn't get punished like multiple times
Right.
for what might look like just one thing they did?
Definitely a key issue.
So that's our mission today.
Sounds good.
We'll break down this case, People v. Queller, look at why the court decided what they did, and then see how it all fits into the bigger picture of California theft law.
It's a great case for understanding those nuances.
So this case all starts with Richard Queller
Good.
trying to buy some cosmetics at Nordstrom
Right.
using a check from an account that was closed.
Interesting.
Now the clerk, Miss Razawi, she got suspicious.
Makes sense.
And get this, she kind of messed up processing the check on purpose.
Oh, wow. So she
It seems like she was trying to stall.
flicked by some time.
Yeah, or maybe double check it.
Mark.
So when she took the check to the back office, Queller followed her and basically just took the check right out of her hand
Oh, wow. Bold move.
before just walking out of the store.
So that's where things get tricky.
Exactly. And that's the key part that leads to the grand theft charge.
Right. Because that taking from the person element is crucial.
Under California Penal Code, Section 487, right?
Exactly. That's the section that deals with grand theft directly from someone.
And it's treated differently
Oh, yeah, definitely. It often has different requirements,
compared to regular grand theft.
which usually focuses on the value of what was taken.
Now, anyone listening is probably thinking, wait, grand theft for a bad check?
Yeah, how does that even
I
work?
mean, a check from a closed account, it's basically worthless, right?
Seems like it.
But that's exactly what the court had to figure out.
Makes you think.
And, from your studies, California law separates grand theft and petty theft.
Right, under sections 487 and 484.
And for grand theft, when it's not taken directly from a person, the stolen thing has to have a certain intrinsic value.
Right, and this is where the court's use of precedent gets really interesting.
Yeah, they reference this other case, Cretus,
Oh, yeah, with the lottery too.
where someone stole a lottery ticket.
A losing lottery ticket,
Right, a losing ticket.
which you think has no value.
Exactly. But the Cretus court said even a losing ticket has some value.
Just because it's a piece of paper.
Right, just the paper itself.
And that becomes really important in Quiller's case.
So the court's reasoning in Queller is super important to understand.
Definitely a key part of this whole thing.
They said that even though the check was from a closed account,
So basically a fictitious check.
right, it still had two kinds of value.
Yeah, two kind.
First, there's the value of the actual paper.
The physical paper itself.
But then second, and this is where it gets interesting,
Okay, I'm listening.
they said it had potential value as a negotiable instrument.
As if it were a real check.
Exactly, if it was legally valid.
Interesting.
And they even compared it to cases about stealing blank checks.
Which are always seen as valuable.
Exactly, even though they don't have an amount written on them.
Right. It's the potential.
Yeah, so the court's logic is basically saying
Huh?
that even a fake check has some inherent worth.
Because of its form and what it's supposed to do.
Right, and it's more than just the paper it's printed on.
Interesting way to look at it.
So the court decided that even this fictitious check
Okay.
had some small intrinsic value.
Because it was paper and because it was designed to be a negotiable instrument.
Something that's meant to be used for payment.
Right.
And this part of the ruling is key. The fictitious check had slight intrinsic value by virtue of the paper and as a negotiable instrument that would entitle payment if legally drawn.
That's the core of their argument about the grand theft from the person charged.
Right. The focus isn't on what the check was supposed to be worth.
Which was nothing in this case.
Exactly, but on the value of the check itself.
Because of its physical form and its purpose.
Now, this might go against what some law students might initially think.
Yeah, you might assume grand theft always has to be about a big dollar amount.
Right. But this case shows that when something is taken from a person directly, that idea of value can be looked at differently.
It's not just about a specific amount of money.
Right. It's about these inherent qualities of the thing itself.
Right, so it challenges some common assumptions.
Like you might think grand theft always means a huge amount of money.
Yeah, or that just taking anything makes it grand theft.
But this case shows that even things that seem low value can be grand theft if they're taken right from someone.
And if they have some inherent value because of what they are.
And what they could be used for.
Exactly.
Now, what stands out to you about this whole line of reasoning?
Well, it really makes us think about value in a different way.
Beyond just money.
Yeah, like looking at what an object is and what it could be used for.
And it makes you wonder about other situations.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, what if Queeler had grabbed a check that was clearly marked void?
That's a good question.
Would that potential as a negotiable instrument argument still work?
I mean, if it's clearly not a real check anymore.
Does it still have that potential value?
That's a really interesting point you bring up.
It makes you think.
Yeah, because by saying void, you're basically eliminating that potential.
Right.
So the argument for value would have to rely on just the paper itself.
Which isn't worth much.
Exactly. It'd be fascinating to see how a court would handle that.
Now, the story doesn't end with the grand theft conviction.
Oh, there's more.
Queeler was also charged with uttering a fictitious check.
Which means trying to use a fake check as if it were real.
Right. And this is where California Penal Code Section 654 comes in.
Ah, yes. A crucial section.
Well, anyone studying California law,
absolutely.
This is a big one because it's designed to prevent someone from being punished multiple times.
For essentially the same act.
Right.
Even if that act technically breaks several laws.
It's about making sure the punishment fits the crime.
Without being excessive or unfair.
So in Killer's case, the court had to look at two things.
Okay.
Creating the fake check with the intent to defraud.
It was the uttering charge.
Right, and then taking that same check back from the clerk.
Uh-huh.
And they had to decide if those were all part of one continuous act.
Driven by a single criminal intent.
And they said yes.
They were connected.
The court figured Killer's main goal was to get stuff from Nordstrom fraudulently.
Right, to basically steal merchandise.
And both trying to use the bad check and then grabbing it back.
Which just steps towards that same goal.
But it's super important to remember that Keeler was also convicted of other crimes.
Oh, right, he had other charges.
Robberies that happened at different times and with different victims.
So those were separate incidents.
Exactly, and those were seen as separate acts with different goals.
So they deserved separate punishments?
Right. The key difference here is this idea of single intent versus multiple objectives.
I see so. Because the fake check and taking it back were all tied to the Nordstrom incident.
The court said punishing him for both separately would go against PC 654.
Right. It would be double punishing him for basically the same intent.
And if we zoom out and look at the bigger picture.
Yeah, what does this all mean?
It shows how the law looks beyond just the specific charges and focuses on what the person was actually trying to do.
What their real objective was.
It's about making sure the punishment matches their overall criminal behavior.
And not punishing them twice for the same thing.
Right. It's not just about adding up potential sentences for each charge.
It's about looking at the whole situation and the intent behind the actions.
So for you as future lawyers, what are the big takeaways from all this?
Well, first, it shows how value in theft law can be a bit tricky.
Right. It's not always just about the dollar amount.
Exactly. You have to think about what an object is, what it's made of, and how it could be used.
Especially when something is taken right from someone.
That paper versus promise idea is helpful for understanding this.
Right. It highlights that intrinsic value.
That inherent worth beyond just money.
And the second big takeaway is how PC 654 actually works in real cases.
Yeah. We see how judges use it to decide on sentencing.
It shows that it's not just about how many charges someone has.
It's about their actions, their intent, and if all the offenses were part of one big plan.
Now, this brings up a big question for the future.
Okay, what's that?
How does this idea of intrinsic value apply to digital stuff?
Oh, that's interesting, like things that don't have a physical form.
Exactly, like if someone steals a digital file.
Like software or digital art.
Does that reasoning about paper still make sense?
That's a tough one.
This is something you'll need to think about as law evolves.
Definitely the law will need to catch up with technology.
Maybe the focus on potential function will become even more important.
Right, because that would still apply to digital stuff.
So if you can see, even something like grabbing a check.
A seemingly simple act.
Can open up a whole discussion about important legal ideas.
Yeah, it really makes you think.
Now you have a better understanding of how California law defines grand theft from the person.
Even when it involves things that don't seem worth much money.
And how the state tries to avoid unfair punishments with laws like PC 654.
It's all about finding the right balance.
I'd suggest looking into other California cases that deal with intrinsic value.
Definitely. There's so much to learn from those cases.
And how PC 654 has been used in different situations.
It's all about seeing how these concepts are applied in real life.
And remember our paper versus promise analogy.
Right. Thinking about value beyond just money.
Can you think of other examples where that kind of thinking might apply?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like gift cards with no money on them.
Or expired coupons.
Exactly.
Even stealing information itself.
Which isn't a physical object.
But can still have value and uses.
Definitely. That's a whole other area where these ideas could apply.
This case, People v. Keller, it really shows how the law goes beyond the surface.
It looks at the details, the intent, the connections between actions.
It's a great example of the kind of critical thinking you'll be doing as lawyers.
And how even seemingly small things can have big legal implications.
So keep exploring, keep learning.
And always be ready to think deeply about the law.
That's the key to being a great lawyer.
Absolutely.
All right, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive.
It was great unpacking this case.
See y'all next time.
Take care.